Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I just tell you, I just have a feeling we have more listeners than ever down here. It's a gut feeling. I feel like I'm hanging out down here with people the suit would hang out with. Suit's a politician, isn't he?
I hear he's
going door to door.
I hear going door to door. Yeah, know if he hit his quota of signings or not. I didn't get a number update from him this week yet.
Well, probably thanks to us, there are fewer. All right, so time now for the play-by-play call of the day.
Puck comes to Hedman. Drops it off. No one there. McDonough with Zibanejad ahead. Breakaway for Zibanejad. Cuts in. Shoots. He scores! Mika Zibanejad with his second overtime goal for the Rangers. They win it 1-0 as Antti Raanta stops 38 shots. Zibanejad, the game winner.
And Kenny Albert with the call on the Rangers radio network last night as they beat Tampa Bay in overtime. Time to bring in Neil Coulong now to talk about the NFL. This is a day where you can start signing sheets for the NFL, but the signings don't become official till Thursday. Neil, welcome. Great to have you with us. What are you, what are the big takeaways on this thing so far?
Right now, I think the Steelers are doing what they normally do, which is really just kind of do their due diligence, kind of get a feel for the market, see what guys are looking to get, what type of contract they'd be willing to sign. I don't think they're going to be day one players, and that's the easiest statement any journalist will make all year about the Steelers. They don't typically get involved right away. But there was some flirtation with Dre Kirkpatrick, the cornerback out of Cincinnati, which I think is kind of an intriguing message that the team is sending, especially considering they only put an original round tender on Ross Cockrell, a player I feel is going to be kind of instrumental to their future. It doesn't seem like they feel he's really worth more than that. They'd rather have the pick if somebody else wants to sign him, or at least they'll let the market kind of determine what type of contract they get him for. And in the meantime, they're going to look around and see if they can build a little bit of depth at the cornerback position, which is something I think they need to do.
All right. I want to ask you about Mike Glennon, because he suddenly has emerged as one of the hot names out there. What is your take on the guy that made Russell Wilson transfer to Wisconsin?
I think Glennon is a fantastically mediocre NFL quarterback. I really don't understand
exactly
what the true value is, but it's a lot of speculation. And really, there is a clear path if you just look at the market that's been generated recently, prominently by Brock Osweiler. It's pretty simple to see why people are coming up with the figures that they are. You don't need to be a great quarterback to make $14 million. In fact, I'd say you're one of the lesser quarterbacks from a starting perspective if that's the contract you have. So, to be honest, I think that, for one, that's just kind of the going rate for a guy that you want to come in and start right away. And two, it doesn't speak to anything to the Chicago Bears' plans in the draft. The main reason why I think his value would go up to that point is because the Bears are going to need a quarterback. It's almost a foregone conclusion that they're going to part ways with Jay Cutler at some point here, probably pretty soon. And if they bring Glennon in, they're going to have to pay him as a starter, because Glennon at that point has a lot more leverage than they probably want to admit. But I think the Bears' plans is to draft a quarterback. So really, if they rent Glennon for 1 year, maybe two, it's not a ridiculous price to pay. I don't see any other team giving him that, though. So the number will be big. People will gnash teeth and yell about it and everything. But really, I don't think the long-term plan for the Bears includes the Super Bowl run next year. I think they know that. So really, I think he's a stopgap guy that they might want to use for a year. And that's obviously if you only sign from Chicago.
The names that will draw the most attention will be the Brandon Marshalls, the Adrian Petersons, the Mike Lennons. Give me a couple of guys that you look at that you find to be intriguing where there is potential value for a team with a need.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. You look at A.J. Aboye out of Houston right now. He's picking up a lot of steam, largely in regards to the value of a veteran cornerback who's coming off a good year. He's not old. He's got good experience. He played really well last season. So you get a guy like that, I think the market can kind of take off and go crazy. But outside of that, it's a really, really deep cornerback draft. So I think the top corners will get some money, but a lot of people are going to say, we're not going to overspend because we can get a really good cornerback in the third round and work it from that perspective. And that includes the Steelers. I think in the end, they would really like to find a veteran cornerback who can step in and play next year, but ultimately I think they'll just find one in the draft and just roll the dice with what they have. But yeah, look at the corners, those top guys. That, you know, Kirkpatrick is another one. He's probably going to make a few bucks, but it's I don't think there are going to be a whole lot of teams that are really going to be competing. So we won't see like a Josh Norman like figure this year.
Exactly. It's interesting that free agency is a lot like the draft to me, that even though you have an established career and you have a body of work, it still seems hit or miss. The New York Giants, to me, are one of the rarities where every free agent they signed last year hit. How do you look at the free agency market?
Giants are probably a team I would have brought up to be on the high end of that. I agree completely. They did a great job evaluating, bringing them in, and then working them into a system. You saw a terrible defense improve to one of the better units in the league overnight. I mean, it really was a surprise to see a team put that much stock into free agency and hit with it. And for me, it's not a question of talent. It's a question of fit. When you have a rookie, you can kind of break them down and build them into the type of player that you want to be. When you deal with the free agent, not only is the free agent more than likely making a lot more money than the rookie is, but you've got the concern that they're going to get comfortable with what they're doing. They signed their, they got their signing bonus. That's really kind of the key thing for a player. Now it's like, all right, well, great, I hit my payday. You know, I don't know if I really like football anymore. Not enough at least to stay for another hour and a half and work out. I just want to go home. So you have to worry about getting the right kind of player that wants to contribute to a championship team. And most times the real issue comes into, in my mind anyway, why didn't the team retain him? If he's that good, if he's worth this much money, okay. But you'd think if this guy really truly was one of the best in his position, there's got to be a reason why his original team didn't want him. So for me, it's not so much a talent level, which is largely what he's getting paid for. It's how does he fit where the team is going, what type of guy he is. And when you're throwing those dollars around, it's easy to get kind of caught up in it and think that this guy's, the next ingredient to a championship run. And as we've seen repeatedly, it's not even close. More of the top end guys really don't, top to bottom, they're not really grossly improving the team, at least not what their contract suggested they would. So it's a gamble in my mind. I would prefer, if it was me in charge, I'd prefer just to build through the draft. It's cheaper. Your mistakes aren't as magnified. It doesn't quite garner the same amount of headlines. And it's tough to draft a job. It's tough to sign a job-saving guy in free agency. You can get that through the draft a lot easier.
Yeah, you can get a part that helps, like a Mike Mitchell, for example. Eventually, he was a part that helped the Steelers. Took a while, but he eventually was. How do you feel, Neil, about how the Steelers... and as a general manager, you have to handle, contracts, how it fits, where it is in the cap, how long a guy's been in the league. So how do you feel they handled the Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell situations?
I think they handled it right as they should have. And really, the reason I say that is because this is a couple years in the making, at least for Brown. You got to keep in mind where they started. They got him on probably the most team-friendly contract in NFL history, as it turned out. Rarely have we seen in the NFL a four-year run the way that Brown has made for himself, and doing that on a contract that really is an above-average veteran receiver today. That's kind of what they get. I mean, Anquan Boldin makes that kind of money. Anquan Boldin is anywhere near Antonio Brown. So they got a lot. And Brown's contract, I think, was the key piece to the Steelers being able to kind of rebuild themselves back when they were, you know, 8-8 for consecutive years. They had to restock talent. They had to find, you know, better players in the draft, but they had to retain the guys that they had. Brown was the one that they could because they signed him on really a sucker deal. They got him after 2 years in the league, you know, basically flashed the same type of money that they wanted to give to Mike Wallace. They just cut a ton of the guarantee part of it out and said, we'll give you a lot more money, but you have to sign up with us for the next six seasons. It's a real tough deal for Brown to want to sign, even though it is, you know, a considerably higher rate, but he's giving up his free agency. You know, with that, if he improves, which you had to kind of think that he would, considering he's 24 years old, they're going to end up really getting him on the cheap, and they did. So it was obvious a couple of years ago. They said basically, look, you have to work with us here. We'll front you some cash. That's more guaranteed money that you're going to get. We can't work an extension right now. The salary cap charge would kill us if we did. Just hang on until 2017 and we'll get you then. And they did exactly that. So in my mind, I think they went about the situation the right way. Brown handled it the right way up until getting his contract. And I think he's worth every dime of it. As far as Bell goes, I think it's interesting that there are reports that they are, you know, pretty aggressively negotiating a long-term deal. It could be a situation, too, where the Steelers kind of want to see Bell with the injury history that he has, with the suspensions that he's had. Can they get him on something that basically any type of run-in with the law or any type of failed test or missed test or anything like that would void out all of his guaranteed money? Something like that, I think, would be very appealing to the Steelers. I'm not sure if Bell would want to do that, but they might have enough leverage to get him on a pretty good deal, and they've got the cap space to do it. Worst case scenario, they can tag him now, they can tag him again next year, and if he plays 32 games over the next two seasons, you're going to look at a pretty remarkable run for him, and maybe at that point, you know, he earns a little bit more money, but I think it's worth the risk, and I definitely think it's worth exploring an extension now.
It's better, what you'd say, better than 50-50 between now and 4 o'clock July 15th, he gets a long-term deal?
I would say no, just because I think that the deal the Steelers want is one that they're positioning from a front of leverage. Yeah. You know, it's going to be tough for any team to sign him for a big-term deal right now.
Okay. Neil, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Good stuff. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong joining us on the show from USA Today. We'll come back with more from D.C. in a moment. Tomorrow we'll have the Big Ten basketball tournament in this time slot on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Here in Washington, where during the commercial breaks I've been asked actually several questions about Sean Carey. And I said I don't know the guy. It just seemed like the right response at the moment.
Well, that's better than throwing me under the bus. So.
I don't know who he is. I mean, I got a little nervous when the word dossier came up. All right, so, all right.
What was that building you drove past again?
The NSA. Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay. Great to have you with us on the show today. 800-795-9565. Bucknell tomorrow against Lehigh with the NCAA tournament on the line. Obviously, it'll be nationally televised, but hey, you're going to really enjoy the experience. If you cannot make it to Soika, which is sold out, Eagle 107 with Doug Birdsong. Turn up the sound on that. Turn the sound down on them. You might find it to be a far more enjoyable experience. So there you go. All right. We've been talking about, obviously, you know, with Penn State basketball. They play tomorrow at 4:30, so in this time slot, we'll be in the middle of the pregame show 24 hours from now. The pregame starts at 4 tomorrow. Tournament action today, NC State lost to Clemson 75-61, so the Mark Gottfried era over at NC State. About 10 minutes ago, Wake Forest leads BC 67-58. Pitt plays Georgia Tech tonight. Two Penn State opponents head-to-head there. Other games, St. Francis takes on Mount St. Mary's tonight for the NEC title. At the Mount. West Coast Conference title is St. Mary's against Gonzaga for the third time this year. And the Summit Championship, South Dakota against Omaha. I'm surprised we have not heard from LeVar Ball today, because Dylan Brooks was named the Player of the Year in the Pac-12. Talk about sacrilege. How could the Balls possibly get through that? Oh. I don't think LeVar Ball understands what a circus it's been that he's created. The circus. I don't take a single thing he says seriously. I'm proud of it. Look, do I blame him for being proud of his sons? Absolutely not. I have 5 children and 4 grandchildren. I can brag about all of them if you want. Jen's a mother. She's a fabulous teacher. Teaches second grade. She's terrific. And Mike, he just got a big promotion up at the hospital in Rochester. Huge promotion. Great father. My son Dan's got promoted up in Massachusetts. Doing really well up there. Chris has overcome everything in his life. He's an excellent writer, and he's on the verge of getting his degree from Lock Haven. And, Megan's been named the Associate of the Year already where she works. And has her degree from Penn State and has done. I could brag about all my kids. We all could. All right? But do we want to have LeVar Ball and the Sioux tell us about their respective kids? Every day, Sean. Really. It's like water dripping on your forehead, isn't it? I hear no response.
Well, there's such a way. You can support your kids, but there's a right way and a wrong way to do it.
Well, this isn't it. I'm saying we can all brag about our kids. We all can. You never hear me talk about my kids on the show until just now.
I just hope the ping pong balls fall into place where the Sixers get the overall number one draft pick and they take Ball, and then we're going to have a whole we'll have a whole Eli Manning or John Elway draft day thing on. Oh, I'm not playing for that team.
Except a lot of people think Markelle Fultz would be the first pick. I don't know. What's interesting is that some are saying that, because Brooks was named Player of the Year. Well, that's all right. Ball will be Freshman of the Year. Who says? Fultz from Washington might be the Freshman of the Year in the conference. I don't know. But he goes on about, about what he thinks, and he's going to be his own brand and the whole thing. Look, just play ball. Just play ball. I'm talking about basketball. And he's got 2 more kids coming up. Who made you the fulcrum in the center? And the people actually interview him? I don't want to talk to you. You're a father. Unless you want, I understand you're proud of your son. I got that. But you aren't the only parent on the face of the earth who's proud of their children. We could bring in one person after another onto the show to tell us about how proud they are of the children. Nobody would have ever heard of them before. Just because he's a basketball player, what means that you can... it's a clown show, really. I don't know.
I'll feel bad for Lonzo Ball's agent.
I think his agent is the guy we just talked about. It might be his father.
He sounds like one.
I don't know. I hear stuff like this. I just kind of shake my head about
One thing about LeBron James, I mean, granted, he didn't go to college, but boy, one thing we didn't hear before he got drafted in the NBA was anything about branding himself. At least
no,
I didn't.
But you know what? It's 2017 now. So many ways which we do business now have changed. I remember when Guido D'Elia in the early 2000s came up to me and he talked about the concept of branding. I said, branding? I said, why didn't you need branding? Isn't playing well good enough? And he went and he really gave me a tutorial over a couple of days about how important it was to establish what your brand happens to be. And it's now been taken to a different level. Lonzo Ball's going to be his own brand. It's not going to be Nike or Adidas or Under Armour or whatever. It's going to be the Lonzo Ball brand.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 1st Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Care, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for the sports bozo of the day. It's going to be right up your alley. Arsenal fans go on an open protest and they march to the Emirates chanting they want Arsene Wenger to leave, the manager of the team. Group gathered at 6 p.m. local time outside the old Highbury Stadium and march holding banners, no new contract. Every story has an ending. We want you to go. By the way, Bayern Munich beat Arsenal 5-1. They are disgruntled. These are your people, Sean.
Yeah, they had a big match over the weekend against Liverpool, and Arsene Wenger decided
got crushed.
They lost 3-1. They were down 2-0 at halftime, but Wenger decided to bench Alexis Sanchez, his top player. He's one of the best goal scorers in the entire Premier League. But what's he do at the start of the second half? Decides to put Sanchez back into the game, but it was too late after that. So that's not helping matters there as well. That's only adding fuel to the fire of Arsene Wenger, the longest tenured manager in the Premier League.
These are your people we're talking about.
They're used to staying in the top four and at least playing in UEFA Champions League every year. So right now they're out of the top four. Actually, and they may not even make it for UEFA Europa League. And those are the fifth place teams. They may even be out of that next year.
So. Now, big story down here right now is the fact that nobody can find Scott McLuhan, the general manager of the Redskins. Not that any harm has come to him, none. But he did not go to the combine. He is not at the team's facility as the legal tampering period began today. He hasn't been around for almost a month.
Yeah, there's been some unique talk down there the last couple of days, especially when the Jay Gruden contract extension story came out, as to just the timing of that.
So, the Redskins have a number of their own free agents. I mean, Chris Baker, who started out at Penn State. In fact, his dad worked with my mom up in Hartford for a period of time. DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, Vernon Davis. And that's just internal free agents. At the combine, Bruce Allen was there. He said McLuhan would return as soon as family matters are cleared up. I know his grandmother passed away, but... But his grandmother passed away on February 6th. I mean, it's a month ago. So I, you know, it's really an odd situation because nobody, I mean, there's no harm to him, but nobody knows where he is. Kind of a guy also seems to over the, you know, I know he's had a couple of demons he's had to deal with in his lifetime. I understand that. but he's also, by all accounts, a smart football guy. Oh, well. But we thought we'd mention that being here. 24 hours from now, we'll be in the early stages of the Big Ten tournament. It's going to be interesting to see how this tournament is embraced here. I know that we are in the land of 100% employment. And there are a lot of Big Ten alums that work here. A lot. And it'll be interesting to see how it's embraced. Indianapolis and Chicago are easy drives for most Big Ten fans. Illinois, Ohio State, Purdue, Indiana, Northwestern. You know, believe it or not, Michigan State. Michigan's not that difficult to drive. Ohio State, not a difficult drive. Not really tough for Wisconsin. If you notice, for Penn State football fans who went out to the Big Ten football championship game at Lucas Oil, that a lot of the Wisconsin fans came in the day of the game. Because it's not that tough a drive for them. So just in that radius, whether it's Indianapolis or Chicago, it's not that it's centrally located in the conference, and it's not a tough trip for most fans. Now, here we are in the southeastern part of the conference, the furthest east. Well, I guess you can go to Rutgers, I suppose. Next year will be at Madison Square Garden. But number two on that list is here. And it's the furthest southeast you can be in the conference. I know there are a lot of Big Ten alums that live here. Obviously, coming here is, you know, let's see the sites. Let's go see the Lincoln Memorial, the Washington Monument. Let's go to the Capitol. Let's go to the Smithsonian, you know, and everything that goes with it. You know, the World War II Memorial. There's a lot of different things that you can go to here and enjoy. I understand that. But if you think your team's going to the NCAA tournament, do you want to spend money on that destination instead of here? Because this is not a drive. It's a fly for most people. And it's, you know, you'll have a lot of Maryland fans here. But Maryland doesn't play till Friday. Now, there might be some Maryland fans that want to come in here and watch some of the games on Thursday so they can look at who Maryland might be playing. The Maryland fans will come out here in droves on Friday. I mean, and Maryland has not just good, they have great basketball fans. I mean, great. I mean, to me, the best atmosphere in the Big Ten is Maryland for basketball. Now, next year it's at the Garden. That's going to be a destination for a lot of people, and there are a lot of Big Ten alums that work in the New York metro area. I think at the Garden it's going to draw really well. In fact, it will make a statement, I think, to the Big East next year about whether their contract continues after 2024, 25, whatever it is, and that the Big Ten starts taking games. The Big Ten wants to get into the Garden before the ACC does. So the attendance here, I mean, there won't be a lot of people here tomorrow. Let's not sugarcoat it. But Thursdays, there's four games on Thursday. Thursday and Friday are the two highest attended days of any tournament. That's because you've got eight different fan bases in the building each day. So it'll be interesting to see what the attendance is like here Thursday and Friday. What can Penn State do to get itself to another bye situation and where they're not playing on Wednesday next year heading into New York City? Talent-wise, it's there. I think if they can somehow, I don't care if it's a graduate transfer or whatever, add a shooter in somewhere, I'd really be in favor of seeing that. Stretch the floor a little bit, a little dependability. I'll give you an example of a guy like that. Example of a guy like that is Akeem Springs from Minnesota. Graduate transfer, outside shooter, graduated from Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and then goes to Minnesota, and he hit, for the most part, he's between 38 and 40% of his threes this year. He was really hot when Penn State played him. He was on a real great streak of 2 weeks. Last couple of games, not so much. But, you know, that's what you're looking for. It's somebody like that that can come in and knock a few down, because Tony Carr will put that ball in the shooting pocket for him. You've got the point guard, and you've got the power forward, and you've got the center. So you've already got the triangle, and then a real X-factor guy in Josh Reaves. You need, obviously, Garner and Banks to step up. They have to for you. Page will actually... Satchel Pierce. His middle name is Page, by the way. Satchel Page Pierce. Satchel Pierce actually might be better for Penn State in the offensive end next year. And then you get Julian Moore, and you move from there. One more shooter, I think, would really help this team. I think you have enough inside. You've got the power forward that's a really tough matchup. You've got the point guard that is a difficult matchup. And we all know, look, they have to win. Now, I mean, what number you want to put on it, I think it's more a perception as to where you are beyond anything. Putting a win total on it or whatever is completely, because you don't even know the schedule yet. I gave you 8 games of the non-conference schedule, and I did give you the home and aways in the Big Ten. Home and aways are next year Ohio State, Maryland, Iowa, Northwestern, and it might be Nebraska. Might be. That's in the conference. I mean, it's always the first thing I look at. Now, where the one plays are, I don't know. You know, which ones are home, which ones are away. And I talked about the non-con, which Penn State is the 18th ranked schedule in the country now. It's going to be around the same range next year at this time. But they have the Barclays tournament, which is Oklahoma State, Texas A&M, Pitt. There'll be 2 mandatory games that they'll play at the Jordan Center against Montana and Oral Roberts that are actually part of the tournament. They've got to return a game at Duquesne. They have to return a game at George Mason. And they have a home game with GW. So that gives them 5 other games to play. And then 2 of the Big Ten games have to be before Christmas next year to accommodate bumping the schedule up a week to accommodate Madison Square Garden. And this is what I'm going to talk to people about when I go out to speak, and I'll talk to you about it. I completely get the chicken and the egg thing. Look, I invest in this thing, and they're not going to win. Look, start winning, I'll show up. That's a sentiment I completely understand. Look, your money's valuable to you. I mean, and I completely get that. And this has nothing to do with marketing. It has nothing to do with promotion. I mean, none of that. Right, Penn State does the same marketing promotions that all the other schools in the conference do. I mean, I see the same in-game stuff at everywhere we go. I don't care whether it's Iowa. You know, I'm at Iowa. They got the Kiss Cam. They got the Dizzy Bat thing, the whole thing. The difference is that it's sold out. I mean, they didn't sell out Iowa on Sunday because of the Dizzy Bat game and the Kiss Cam. It was just all part of making everything internally fun there. Okay, so it's not why, I mean, those kind of things don't sell tickets. It just makes the experience fun. People want to see winning basketball. They're aching to see winning basketball at Penn State. Pat Chambers has been able to get a caliber of player in from a part of the state that Penn State has not been able to get before. I think it's important that now that you have it, to see it through and see it out. What can make a difference in a game or two, believe it or not, happens to be you. You. Penn State played 9 road games this year in the Big Ten. 7 of the 9 were sold out. Penn State actually played, for the most part, until they got to Iowa and Nebraska, they actually, for the most part, played decently on the road. Won at Illinois, went triple overtime with Indiana. It was okay with Minnesota. It wasn't really great. Should have won at Michigan. I mean, that's one of the Penn State let get by was the Michigan game. They had that game. And at home, near miss with Ohio State, defensive possession killed them there. Near miss with Purdue, I think defensive possession hurt them there too. At home. And I've always felt that with young teams, winning at home was the first step toward real progress. And in talking to groups this summer and in talking with you, I'd say, look, give it a shot with these kids. You know, give them a home court advantage. Be a part of it. See if you make it. And if it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. Then I don't blame you for not coming back if you don't think it worked. But give it a shot. Get involved. Get some tickets. Jump on board. See if you can make a difference, and suddenly, you know, you can push the program as fans from this point to the next level, because they've got next level talent that just needs to grow up. You'd be amazed at how much you can accelerate the growth of young talent because of what a home court means. Look at the young talent this year for James Franklin. Penn State went 7-0 at home this year. The single most important game of the year was that Minnesota game where Penn State was 2-2. Stadium was a little bit flat. And then Trace McSorley, instead of running with the ball, pulled up and hit Irvin Charles over the middle. He went 80 yards for a touchdown. From that point on, in the third quarter of that game, on October 1st, Beaver Stadium became a madhouse. Teams couldn't hear when they came in. Big plays happened, and that place went insane. The crowd was into every single play. And it's no coincidence that that young football team that they had last year was tremendously aided by great crowds at Beaver Stadium that were so supportive. It made such a difference. And I think with the young talent that Pat Chambers has been able to assemble, and the fact they've gone from being three or four possessions away in games to now being a single possession a game, probably a defensive stand away in games, I think the maturity of the talent in combination with fans jumping on board could make a real difference at Penn State. If it doesn't a year from now, you can tell me straight out I was dead wrong. And I would sit here and not disagree with you and let you have your say and take me to the woodshed. But in my 35 years of doing this, and next year will be my 36th season doing it, that's just what I've observed. And that's some of the conclusions I've come to. We'll wrap it up in a moment from D.C., where I'm telling you they're listening intently on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
I think next year will be obviously an important year for them. Hey, look, Patrick Chambers knows it. That's one thing I talked to him about last night away from everybody. And I said, look, I said, do you still enjoy the wins? You know, he's kidding around with me a little bit. And he said, yeah. I said, well, you see my point about that. And he says, yeah, I understand what you mean. And the reason I said that to him was, you know, you don't want to get to a point where you win and you're so obsessed about the Networks because you're so intent on what you're doing that you lose sight of where you are. And that's, you know, and he has it, which is that's a big plus, that he has it, that he does enjoy the wins, that it does mean something to him, because at that point you're burning out as a coach. I mean, you're burning out if that's what's happening. And he's not at that point. He's focused on what he's doing with this. And he's worked hard. You know, you hear the word culture all the time. Well, he's worked hard to get it to this point. That's part of the coaching part. And it's interesting, you know, I've had some people say, look at the job that James Franklin did in close games this year for Penn State. No question. And, of course, they're comparing to what Chambers in basketball have done. No question. But what happened was that Chris Godwin became a junior. Kabinda became a junior. Barkley became a sophomore. Some of the offensive linemen grew up an extra year. They got a punter into the program, which made a big difference. A place kicker that's reliable made a big difference. Haley became a junior. Reed became a sophomore. Right? More depth was involved to allow them to win close games. James Franklin's exactly the same coach he was his first 2 years when it was perceived by people he couldn't win close games. Then they won close games, and suddenly he's perceived as, wow, what a great job he did coaching. Well, he's been doing a great job coaching the entire time. Patrick Chambers now has them to the point where they're a possession away. A possession away. Well, next year, Tony Carr becomes a sophomore. Stevens becomes a sophomore. Watkins becomes a sophomore. Reeves becomes a junior. It makes a difference in that growth where once you break through the ceiling, like football did in the Minnesota game, it's amazing what the confidence of that does for you. Penn State's confidence on the field grew exponentially because of what they did in that Minnesota game. And we talked about it after the game right away because you could see it and feel it. That's about where the basketball program is. The basketball program needs to break through that ceiling and taking that one possession and flipping it. And suddenly, if you do that, the perception of what you feel about the program changes. As I said, above all, the Rutgers game was the one above all that they lost. That's the perception game right there. And when they couldn't get that one possession to swing their way against Purdue, that one possession against Ohio State, imagine if they got both of those. They do that, we're having a different conversation today. For one thing, I'm not doing this show in D.C. today. So it's a little bit closer than people think, but they've got to somehow win. We know it.
Your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com. This is WKOK Sunbury.